Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Told in interweaving timelines, Helen Klein Ross's new novel, The Latecomers, is the story of five generations of a Connecticut blue blood family and how they are changed forever by an Irish immigrant girl they hire as a housemaid in 1909. The novel unfolds from a mysterious death and includes love, betrayals, old money, motherhood, and meticulously researched American history, bringing steam engines, top hats, and suffragettes into colorful collision with cell phones, 9/11, and ancestry apps. Helen Klein Ross's previous novels include What Was Mine and Making It, a novel of Madison Avenue. Again, the new novel is The Latecomers, and it's a pleasure to welcome Helen Klein Ross to this week's Book Show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell me which came first, your intersection with this house or the idea of this type of intergenerational story?
Definitely the house.
Okay.
The house is where the story began. My husband Donald and I were not expecting to buy an old falling down governor's mansion in Lakeville, Connecticut. But the moment I walked through the doors, it just took me. And I was already hearing stories in the walls, in the basement where an old gravestone was lying against the limestone foundation, in the turret, the fourth floor turret, where there's an octagonal views of a lake. And yes, there was mold, and yes, there was water damage, and yes, the wallpaper was peeling, but I love that place. And I think because it was already starting to speak stories to me.
How far did you go into the understanding of what the history of the property was before you bought it? In the sense of, was that part of the allure?
It was part of the allure, but I kind of sensed the history rather than researched it before buying.
Right.
As soon as we saw it, I was so taken with it. It was just, I don't know, you know, you get a project of love and lunacy, and I'm thankful that Donald, my husband, went along with this. And so we acquired the house, and the minute we acquired it, we began meeting with Catherine Chilcott, who was the town historian at the time. And she was very forthcoming with pictures and history and images, and she hooked us up with people in the town who had been to the house, whose forebears had lived there and built the house. And so we got a lot of information about the house and the town during those times from people.
Was your mission always to restore it to what it was or to what you wanted it to be?
Oh, always to what it was. It was built by a governor of Connecticut, Governor Holly, who was governor in the 1860s, I think. He had built this magnificent place in 1853, a lot of it himself. Of course, he worked with an architect and contractors and laborers, but so much of himself was in the house. That's why it's kind of a crazy house. It's not really, you know, Italianate. It's not really colonial. It's its own thing.
When, as you said, then the story started to speak to you, and when did you start to listen?
Very early on, we did walkthroughs of the house, and in the living room slash library, there's a floor-to-ceiling bookcase with glass panes. The panes are etched 1860, and I thought, oh my God, that was before the Civil War. So people were in this room while our country was literally being torn apart. And what was it like for them? What were they thinking? What were they doing? So already I was beginning to kind of hear conversations in the walls. My story, The Latecomers, started a bit later, 1899, but it really came from just senses that I got from being in the house. I was careful not to make it about anybody who had lived in the house. Mm-hmm. It's not about the family who lived there. It's a fiction, but I feel that fiction is the best conduit of truth. So even though the story isn't factual, I hope people will find there's a lot of truth in it.
So bring us to, it's 1908, 1909, ultimately, where we learn and we are introduced to Bridie. And this is a young girl from Ireland. And she runs away. And what brings her to Connecticut?
Oh, that's part of the story.
I know.
Well, Bridie leaves. She's 16, and she leaves with her intended, and they intend to marry. They can't. And she ends up a few weeks later on Ellis Island alone. He dies on the ship, and with nothing, she thinks, except she does have something. It's, you know, she's pregnant. So she makes her way to a home that actually existed, the Home for Irish Immigrant Girls, Holy Rosary. And they took in thousands of Irish immigrant girls and also girls from other countries and helped them find jobs and homes. But it is a Catholic home. And so when she starts the show, they give her a ticket to another place for the moral good of the other girls. And she finds her way to a Protestant home where she meets a young philanthropist from Connecticut who takes her to her family's estate in a place called Wellington, Connecticut, to give Bridie a chance to start her life over, which she does.
Tell us a little bit about the Hollingsworth family.
The Hollingsworth family are similar to the Hollywood family in that their house was built by a governor in 1853, but mm-hmm. that's really where the similarity stops. Although there was one other similarity, and that is how did the governor have the wherewithal to build this crazy, huge mansion on 14 acres of property? It was because of manufacturing, which was huge in Connecticut in the time. So my governor has a brasswares factory. The governor who built Hollywood had a pocket knife factory. But both of them were dependent on a manufacturing business that was huge in those days that kind of became not huge after turn of the century.
Helen Klein Ross is our guest. The name of the new book is The Latecomers. Who are the latecomers?
The latecomers, that's a great question. The latecomers is a word that applies to many in this book, I think. Bridie, being an immigrant, is a latecomer to our country. Sarah is a latecomer to motherhood. Vincent is a latecomer to news about who the heck he is. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all latecomers in one way or the other.
And the idea of when you had this, the place and even the people started to speak to you, did you know that you wanted it to be sprawling?
No, I didn't. I thought it would be set. The first chapter I wrote was the one where Bridie in 1908 is waiting for the ship in Liverpool with Tom. And that's set in 1908. And so I sort of thought it would go from 1908 to 1926. But the Hollingsworth family is five generations. And the later generations were really speaking to me, saying, wait, include me. And so I did. What was kind of interesting to me is I thought most of the research would be in turn of the other century, 1900s. And I did do a lot of research, but I found myself more challenged by research of times that people had lived through, that readers had lived through. For instance, if I made a mistake about a 1906 artifact, no one would call me out.
Right.
But if I messed up on what were teenagers carrying around in the 1990s, you know, a lot of readers would call me out.
Does history get in the way when you're telling a story like that? I mean, even in the author's note, you say many of the events take place in the story are historic occurrences, but this novel is a work of imagination. to make those intersections work, how pliable do both sides have to be?
I kind of base my approach on a television show called Mad Men, which took us through historic times in what I found was a strikingly interesting way. And that was, it's not about history, it's about the people. So even though in 1961, the bomb scare or the president assassination or whatever historic event is happening, you still have to sit down to dinner. You still have to make the dinner and go shopping. Your kids have to go to school. You have all the personal cares and worries that you have during non-historic times. I really admired the way Matt Weiner, who was the showrunner for AMC's Mad Men, handled that and made us feel, how did history impact us personally? Not how did it impact politics or the country. How did it impact families? And that's what I wanted to do with the latecomers.
He was famously known, is famously known, for being such a stickler for detail. It seems that you follow that as well.
I admired that. You know, when Mad Men first started running, somebody said, oh, he's crazy. You know, he struck a set because the apples were too big. In the 60s, apples weren't pumped up like they are today. And he saw apples in a bowl in Betty Draper's kitchen that were too big. So he struck the set. And I thought, how admirable. That's why the show's so good.
That was a world that you've lived in, right? I mean, you were in advertising. You've written about advertising in your first novel. So that is something that strikes a chord as well.
Yeah, and that's why I had Vincent go into advertising. I entered advertising post-Mad Men, but I was always very interested in the people in the field who had come before me. So Vincent enters advertising in the 1930s, just when market research is becoming a thing. So I got to explore that little rabbit hole to great satisfaction.
Tell us a little bit about the other characters. The layout of the book is we go to voices, a chorus of voices telling us a story, and go from year to year and back and forth.
I didn't make it linear. I felt I did not want to do that, although in the beginning I thought it would be linear. But because different generations were speaking to me, I wanted to give them kind of equal weight. And I realize it's like when you meet someone, you don't sit down and tell them your life story. First I was born, and then I went to pre-K. That's not how you do it. So I wanted this book, The Latecomers, is a portrait of a New England family. And because it's a portrait of a family, I wanted to divulge the stories in a way that felt comfortable, human, you know, just the way you would tell your own family story.
So tell us about, we talked about Bridey. So tell us about Sarah and then Vincent.
Bridey was the first character that came to me. I really, you know, I have, I'm Irish American myself, and so I've sat at a lot of dining room tables and heard stories that were similar to Bridey's. Sarah was someone that came to me as I lived in the house. There were lots of things in this house, like a call button, where, you know, like on Downton Abbey, mm-hmm. where you ring the bell. So I'm thinking, wow, Sarah had this. You know, she was in her bedroom, and she would press a button, and the servant in the kitchen would bring her whatever she wanted. It was hard for me to imagine that kind of life, but living in the house helped me do that.
And then Vincent, as you said, comes into the story. But for him to be a voice, you wanted him to be a main voice in the story.
Yes, I did. I felt that he was a very important character. And honestly, he came from letters written by my great uncle to my mother in the 1980s, describing his childhood in 1910, 15, 20. I gave Vincent my uncle's birth date. And so some of the details in my uncle's letters made their way into the book. And I thank my late uncle for that.
For the creation of this family and the latecomers that you write about, what was the thing you wanted to explore? It seems like there are many things that you wanted to explore. I mean, obviously there's that history, but there's also the ideas of family. There's also the ideas, obviously, of Catholicism, of religion, the effect that that has on someone. It is fascinating to see the various subjects that come up within the novel.
And immigration. What is it like to come to this country with nothing? I got a contract for this book the summer of 2016, and I couldn't write. I was too happy. I was so happy that I had a good book contract and we were going to have the first woman president. So when I woke up on November 9th, 2016, I felt, wow, an immigrant story is urgent after all. And so I was propelled to write this book from the perspective of someone who is a newcomer, a latecomer to the country.
So it is tinged by what we've been living through the past 2 years.
It was propelled by what we've been living through over the past 2 years. I somehow didn't feel that an immigrant story was that urgent the summer of 2016, even though I had a contract to write a novel about it. I was excited, but I wasn't propelled. On November 9th, 2016, it felt so urgent to write the story of an immigrant in a way that it hadn't a few months before.
Do you think it changed the direction of the story?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Because of that urgency.
I think maybe the story might have been centered more around Sarah and the Hollingworths than it is. As it is written, Bridie is the central character.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Vincent, who is not literally an immigrant, but an immigrant to some of the ways of the world in which he inhabits. So, yeah, I'm sure it had a huge impact on the development of the book.
One of the first films he sees is The Immigrant.
Yeah, and that's, there you have it. Also, he sees The Birth of a Nation,
yes,
with his grandfather. And it's so funny, Joe. I had heard about, you know, Birth of a Nation and Jazz Singer and Immigrant. I had never watched them. You know, I sort of imagined flickering, silent characters on screen. But for research, of course, I watched them on YouTube, and I was stunned to see all the pejorativeness against immigrants. You know, and when Bridie comes over, there is a huge anti-immigrant sentiment.
Mm.
There was lots of immigration. Millions were coming in from Southern and Western Europe, and it was thought to be destroying our country. And so blockades were put up against immigrants, and lots of ideas were circulated about how to keep them out. So it really made me feel like, wow, deja vu.
So when it comes to the conclusion, to achieve what you wanted to achieve and also to tell an honest story and to do Bridie right, It also teaches us a lesson of the importance of the immigrant in our history and culture.
Bridie is the only one who knows how to do anything in the house.
Right.
It's sort of a metaphor.
We need her.
We need her. We need her. No matter what it is you want to do, we need the energy of immigrants. We need their smarts, and we need the fact that they're latecomers. And so they want to be here in ways that we have forgotten.
Helen Klein-Ross is our guest in this week's book show. The name of the book is The Latecomers. Were there any real challenges that you had to overcome in the writing of this particular novel?
Organization. And for that, I thank the Scrivener program. I don't know if there's any writer. I'm sure there's lots of writers listening. I could be Scrivener's agent. Honestly, it took me a year and a half to write this book. It would have taken me 10 years without Scrivener because of the research. Every chapter, every scene had to be researched. When Sarah gets married in 1910, what shoes is she wearing? What do people give as gifts? What do they say? So in Scrivener, I made all these buckets with images from 1910, mm-hmm. YouTubes of 1910. So whenever I was writing a scene in whatever year, I was able to just click a button and be in the year 1910 or 1932 or whatever. So that was super helpful to me. And I offer that advice to anybody writing historical fiction.
Did you like going into those years? Is that fascinating to immerse yourself into that time?
That was my favorite part of writing the novel. I could go down those rabbit holes and stay there. Honestly, if I didn't have a book deadline, thank God I did, I would still be writing. Because the research was fascinating.
And the research allowed you, I assume it sends you down other roads too, some fruitful, some not fruitful, but maybe ideas for things down the road?
For the next novel?
Sure.
Yes, I'm about halfway through my next novel that is also historic, but set in a very different time and place.
What are the challenges in just in writing an historic novel?
I think the biggest challenge is taking on the consciousness of someone who is living in that time. We forget how much we know. And I'm not just talking about scientific discovery. I'm talking about assumptions and knowledge and grasps of truth that weren't so obvious back in the day. Although there are similarities, there was a lot of nutrition information going around in 1908. Vincent Bernard McFadden was a guy who talked to young boys in 1908 via books and magazines, advising them never to eat white bread, to sleep with caps on their heads, to do a lot of crazy stuff that would build up their strength, which was very important to Vincent, a character going off to boarding school. You know, there's a lot of similarities to today.
Now, you slept with a cap on your head to keep in the heat, right?
I think it was to keep in the heat, yes. But it also had to do with brain waves, which was a thing back in those days.
Because I remember my father always said, if you wake up with a headache, it's because you didn't keep your head warm at night.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. And did your father read Bernard McFadden, I wonder?
Probably. Yeah, probably. When you think about what you have created and the novels that you have written, how do you think you've progressed as a novelist?
I hope I've gotten better. it's really a challenge and an art. It's like anything else. I mean, I do feel more confident and more able to make decisions than I did when I first started out on this journey. But I feel like, oh, there's such a long way I have to go.
Mm.
And that's why it's great to be a reader of people who are much further along on the path than you are.
I want to go back, as we wrap up our conversation, just to touch on something that you mentioned about the impact that the election had. I find it interesting. I mean, I know we had many of these conversations post 9/11 as to the art that would come out after that time. And you do wonder, this is a very early example, but of the art and the exploration, both obviously, yes, novels, but also poetry, fine art, theater, name it, of what will come out of this period of time.
A lot of my friends haven't been able to write or paint or write poetry because they wake up every day with this huge weight on their chest and they don't have a book contract. And so I wonder if there will be a dearth of art created during this period. I don't know. I hope not.
There's also, and I realize that, I guess, or I understand that, I guess I also think, too, of people who feel compelled to write as activism.
Yeah. I mean, my next novel is based in 1930s Germany, as Hitler's rising to power, but before he has full power. And it's from the perspective of a non-Jewish family who is split by political differences. The mother and younger daughter feel like that's what we need, a strong man to bring our country back.
Mm.
And the father and the older daughter are horrified by it. And I think that's what's happening here. And I'm very interested in that split.
Is it easier to write about it as you're living through it as opposed to writing about it when there has been whatever the conclusion will be?
I think I write it because I need to write it.
Right.
Just like other people need not to write, I need to write. And so that's my response.
Helen Klein Ross's new novel is The Latecomers. It is published by Little Brown. What a delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's a delight to be here.
Thank you. Helen Klein Ross's new novel is The Latecomers. It is published by Little Brown. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.